The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome to the show. In other news, Stephanie Grisham, spokeswoman for First Lady Melania Trump, according to the Washington Examiner, is emerging as the top candidate to replace outgoing White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, according to sources familiar with the selection process. Grisham is a former Trump campaign aide who has served in the White House since Trump took office, is known as a shrewd tactician, loyal to the First Family, but significantly, she meets President Trump's top criteria that Sanders' replacement be a woman. When he says he wants a woman, he wants a woman, a source familiar with the selection process told the Washington Examiner. The second source, a former Trump aide, said the president really wants to have a woman fill the role. And in the Trump has mentioned both Grisham and former State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert as possible successors to Sanders.
All right.
So, I would want that job for all the money in the world.
No, thank you.
No.
Not going to happen. No. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. You know what my answer to every question is going to be? Next question. We've covered that. Next no comment. Next question. That would be it. Well, no, you have to comment. No, I don't. Next question. Be like Putty from Seinfeld.
All right. Next question. No comment. No comment. High five. No comment.
No, you have to comment.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
What would possess? No, what is the incentive?
And people want
for someone to do that.
People want that job.
That's a totally different thing. I understand inside the Beltway, you know, the mindset changes, and that's a gig. I mean, if you get that gig for 10 minutes, you're going to be all over Fox News.
You can write a book.
Yeah, you have a just ask right. What's his name. What'd they call him? The Mooch? What was his name? Scaramucci. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Scaramucci. He's all over Fox. Well, he's not all over Fox News, but you write a book and then you're all over Fox News. And he was there for 10 minutes.
Was it that long?
Long enough to walk in the front door and out the back door. I just don't know. I mean, it really has to be, okay, I'll bite the bullet and go through this, and I'll heal myself on the other side and write a book and go from there. I mean, look, Sarah Huckabee Sanders has done, I think, a great job.
Oh, wonderful job.
It's just, I keep thinking of Piegate and how she just owned it. It was just so great and really funny. But if you think about today's world, it is, I mean, if you go back pre-social media, all right, you could hide after the spin. Now the newspapers were still going to go after you, but who cares, right? Now it's instant and constant, never-ending, back in your face. It's not just the media that's in the room. It's the social media that is everywhere and the echo chamber of social media that keeps it going and going and going and going. And frankly, in this administration, you're concerned about making a comment as the mouthpiece for the president and the White House, and at the same time worrying if the president is tweeting something very different, because that, that's happened before. And then the next day you have to go back and issue the clarification and hope that the president isn't tweeting no clarification needed. I mean, that's the reality of this administration. But outside of that,
well, I wouldn't want it know. Under any president's administration.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Outside of that, right. I don't know why you would want to do that, because okay, we've talked to our colleagues and we've had discussions with many of them, and you would have an opportunity to have a spokesperson on. I tend to think that we might be able to get a little something more, maybe. I guess be hopeful we could get a little something more out of a Sarah Huckabee Sanders, but really not much. The point being is that for us and what we do, if you're booking a guest, we talk to our colleagues who have these daytime shows, these mm-hmm. morning shows and everything else, and we certainly don't want to pretend to be the greatest program directors in the world, but I don't see the point in having someone on that is going to spend, even if I voted for the guy or girl, lady, having their spokesperson on is not going to solve the thing, the concern, and they're not going to answer my question.
Especially if they're not going to answer the question.
Right, right.
And that's what, to me, that would be my biggest frustration if I was an interviewer. Mm-hmm. And it was my biggest frustration when I, you know, worked a lot of daytime radio and used to, you know, have on guests, is the fact that when you bring on a politician or whatever, they wouldn't answer the question.
Right.
Well, my problem is I want them to answer the question so I don't move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they will never come on the show again because they feel that they're being harassed by you
mm-hmm.
when you're simply stating, you didn't answer my question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, I did. No, you didn't. I asked the question. This is the question. You didn't. You claim this. And then you go back and forth and it becomes pulling teeth because their goal is not to answer your question. And to me, that's always been the biggest problem. And you see it a lot. You see it a lot today where it's accepted, where you know they're going to have a guest on who's not going to answer the question.
Right. Yep. Yep.
And then you say, well, every day you're doing a show where you've got a new guest on who's not answering your question.
Yeah.
Eventually you say, well, what's the point?
Right. Right.
You might as well just analyze what's going on. And bring it to your audience because they're not answering any questions. So, but look, I do think that this White House has learned, and I think it's because of Acosta, that it's not a press conference anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't have. It's not the situation now is you have a presidential spokesperson who goes before a bunch of activists. It's not journalists asking a question, and then if you don't answer, say, look, you didn't answer the question. Here's the question. I just don't know where you're going. And in a sincere way, it's what you saw with Jim Acosta, which is, I want to be a troll. I'm going to be an activist troll against you, which Acosta has become.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's certainly not a journalist.
Right.
He's arguing with you. Well, no, just ask the question. And then you can say later on, when you do your report, I asked the president this question. I couldn't get an answer from him. I asked him, I asked this question. Here was his answer. Here it is. You can see it. And clearly he did not wish to answer my question, which, again, you can actually, by doing that, you can get people on your side. Because that's what a Tim Russert would do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We haven't answered my question. Right. Well, you know, here's the question. Here's the tape that just said. And you knew by the time the politician was done with Tim Russert, because he didn't have an agenda except getting to the truth.
Right.
He wasn't
right.
trying to argue with you.
Right.
It wasn't, I disagree with you. He said, well, I'm having you on here. I'm asking this question because here's the tape of what you said last year, and it was the opposite point of view.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to, Anderson Cooper, if you really want to keep him honest, do what Tim Russert did. And side note, thoughts and prayers for Anderson Cooper after the death of his mother, Gloria Vanderbilt.
Yes.
Back in the day when, in terms of designers, I didn't wear designer jeans. The girls in the schools did, you know, back in the day. And she, when you said Vanderbilt, of course, everyone knew. It was a huge brand. And our thoughts and prayers are with him and their
yes,
family
yes,
in this time of loss. But you talk about the job at hand of what journalism should be. What should it be? It should be, and really, this is it. Journalism plays such a vital role in a free society. Because if you do practice it, like Russert did, they just, we just went through, just past the, anniversary of his death. And they had some articles up at NBC News and CNBC, and you and I talked about it then. I mean, there were two major, if you think about it, during the election cycles in the Obama years, two major deaths that I think had an impact on what would have been discussed, what would have been found, what would have been revealed or any of that. And that was Andrew Breitbart, during the second run of re-election for 2012 for Obama. But then, of course, with Tim Russert. And what would it have changed the results of the election? We have no idea. But they both had real impacts. But Tim Russert, especially because of his ability and his forum and the way he practiced it. Again, you don't care when someone is doing it like that. Here's what you said then. Here's what you're saying now. We've said that before.
Well, we mentioned that, you know, Jake Tapper, for example, the other day on CNN, and we talked about this, I believe it was yesterday, time flies. And Jake Tapper had on Skater Bob.
Right.
Had on Beto O'Rourke.
Mm-hmm.
And he was asking him that Julian Castro came out and said that it shouldn't be against the law anymore. We shouldn't make it a crime to be in this country illegally.
Right.
And he was asking, what do you think about it? Well, he had to ask him three times because he never answered the question.
Right.
And finally, he got him down where he says, well, no, I don't agree with him. Now, O'Rourke was lying. O'Rourke actually does agree with Julian Castro on open borders and having a crime. But the fact is, Jake Tapper at least was able to get out of O'Rourke. He finally answered the question, but it was pulling teeth. It was a good 3 minutes before he finally get the answer as he was being filibustered. Now, the thing is, if Obama would have been there, Obama would have filibustered the entire interview.
Right. With
and,
no answer.
And, right. And
no
that,
clear answer.
And by the way, politicians do that all the time. Mm-hmm. And then when you say, look, you haven't answered my question, they feel insulted. Or remember when Obama, who was interviewing him? Was it Chris Wallace?
Was it Chris Wallace?
I forgot. Yeah, I believe it was
yes,
Chris Wallace.
Yes, it was.
And he was upset. Because he followed, and he didn't go on Fox again because he was upset because we didn't know there was going to be a follow-up question.
Right, right.
Well, you didn't answer the question. The follow-up question was you didn't answer the first question.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, to me, that is really the most frustrating part of it. So I like my job better. I like my job of seeing what they say and then analyzing it.
Well, exactly. I mean, because it is important to take it apart on the ideas and break it down as to what they're really saying, what they're really promoting, and what they are often afraid to say.
I'd rather analyze an interview.
Yeah.
Because, any day of the week.
Well, because Russert had a way of, you know, again, the whole keeping him honest thing, but there was no guarantee because there were plenty still in sitting across from Russert that could do the dance. And let's face it, they were all doing the dance to a certain extent. It was, and sometimes it was very lame, very often because he had them cornered. And because you weren't getting the Martin Short guy that was the skit they did one time where he's smoking the cigarette and he's really nervous and he's going what did I say, and he's, you know, they're trying to force him to tell the truth about something. You didn't get to that point, but you got pretty close with a Tim Russert. Taking the audio of what they say, and which is what we do on the program quite often in their own words, and breaking it down as to what they're promoting, trying to put into policy, is paramount, because this is really the only way to get to the truth is to truly analyze it at its core. What's behind the thought process, what they ultimately want, what they ultimately would like to achieve through whatever action they're promoting.
Just so you know, I mean, you probably saw it, but Russert died 10 years ago last week.
Yeah. That's what I was just saying.
Yeah.
They just went through his anniversary on NBC and CNBC. Posted some articles and moments of, you know, it was great journalism, I believe. It was the best you could do. It's the way you should practice journalism. Again, not that he was going to get honesty every time. They all know how to dance. But certainly you knew, at least by the end of it, you knew. It was
right,
very
knew,
clear,
right.
And you could make your own decision based on the work that Tim Russert did.
And now with the internet even more advanced,
yes.
And we live in an era where the politicians still don't understand or apparently want to recognize or appreciate that everything is recorded.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That they still say things. For example, on the whole thing, here's what the liberal media did not do.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, we had the debate as we've had over the last 2 years on illegal immigration.
Mm-hmm.
If it was Pelosi or if it was Schumer, if it was anybody else on a national show, Russert would have played everything that we have played that showed, for example, a Schumer who used the exact same rhetoric as a Donald Trump on illegal immigration just a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
And so Russert would have called him on it, playing that audio and say, you had the exact same position as Donald Trump. Answer
right,
it.
Right.
And so if he tried to squirm out of it, he still couldn't, to the listener, squirm out of it. He'd be, you know, throwing whatever rhetoric back at Russert, but it wouldn't hold any water. What you don't have these days is people on TV, on the mainstream media networks, doing that. They mm-hmm. won't do that. They'll pretend that the past has never existed, that you never had a different opinion. They'll just ask what you think today. And so the Democrats can walk away scot-free. Mm-hmm. I remember being very quickly at 2004 at the Iowa caucuses for the Democrats. I remember talking, and I was staying in the same hotel as all the Democrats. Every one of them hated Trump. Hated Tim Russert.
Yeah, 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 right.
Everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
You're pumped for summer, but are your tires? As the temperature rises, so does the importance of tire maintenance. The key to staying on the road this summer is to stay on top of regular tire inspections. Heat is a tire's worst enemy. The hotter a tire gets, the more likely a failure is to occur. Extreme heat not only causes tire rubber to deteriorate quicker, it also increases the pressure in tires. On a hot summer day, highway surface temperatures can climb to more than 150 degrees. Combine that with an underinflated tire that's already running hot, and it's only a matter of time before you have a serious tire issue on your hands. Check your tire pressure regularly to make sure it matches the recommended cold PSI level indicated on the sidewall of the tire. For extra tire assistance, stop into a TH truck service near you and let one of our expert technicians help.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TH Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. U.S. military releases new images of the Japanese oil tanker attack here. The satellite photos that they showed, and then the real up close. You see the up close one that seemed like it was right above,
right?
Like they were almost 30 feet above the boat. So they know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think. Right now, with you have more troops, that 1,000 troops that are going to go over to that region. It's clear the United States is still in a defensive posture, but a greater, I guess, footprint in that region. And we have the world's backing, everyone except Iran. Now, China made the government of China just a little while ago, since we've been on this morning, released a statement basically saying that there is of course, you risk opening the Pandora's box in the escalation with Iran, but I think that's a given in any situation. How is it not? I don't know that we're learning anything there, and that's really not a position by China. That's just them stating the obvious. Being Captain Obvious, basically, in this case. And the U.S. really has no choice. We have to have a greater footprint to send the message to Iran in that region.
Disturbing on so many levels. Eric Hartley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary, 866-90-RED-EYE. We've mentioned corporate taxes before. Ike in South Carolina has a comment on that. Ike, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi.
Yeah, hey, guys. You know, this argument has a pretzel logic flavor to it, because I continuously hear businesses and corporations, and you can call them whatever you want, multi-conglomerates, etc., always complaining that they pay too much in tax. Now, if they have the unbridled ability to pass on the cost of everything that has to do with their business, whether it's labor cost or property taxes or cost of production, etc., which way is it? Because they can't have it both ways.
Yeah, they can.
Are they paying too much in tax?
Sure, they can. Sure, they can. Actually, they can, because you can only raise the cost of your good or service to the point that the market will bear. That affects your competition ability. You can't compete in a market if those costs become greater and greater. Of course, it does. You can have it both ways. That's the whole point.
Okay, so you're telling me that if all things being equal in a market, let's just take
it's not equal in a market
example.
Because that's a fantasy. All things being equal, there's nothing equal in competition.
If your labor costs are the same as the next guy,
no, they aren't. Because they're not the same.
Well, you're assuming all of that, but that's not the same. But what you're forgetting is, again, you're looking at economics in a tunnel vision. You're not looking at all the variables. You forget about the fact, let's say, for example, forget about international competition. If you've got corporate taxes that are higher, that we won't even talk about international competition, which they could undercut you because of the corporate taxes to begin with, was one of the problems. But forget about that for a moment. Let's take your point that corporate taxes are the same across it, and the only competition is within those companies where the corporate tax is the exact same. You claim it has no effect. Of course it does, because people buy less of that product because the corporate tax increases the cost of that good or service. Therefore, they buy less of it. You have fewer dollars if that tax did not exist. You have money at that point to invest in research and development. You have money to give to stockholders, which then if stockholders have that money, then that's available wealth for them to invest and use in the economy.
In fact, you had automakers and Harley-Davidson talking about the tariffs, okay, which is a different kind of tax. And they talked about it recently. Yeah. In fact, their profits, when they were talking about it, they said one automaker, and I don't have the information in front of me, but that one automaker was saying, right now, we're not passing the cost of those tariffs onto the consumer. And the reason they couldn't do that is because the market will only bear so much. So what they're hoping is, in this case, crossing their fingers, that the tariffs would end and they could go back to seeing that profit margin per unit sold. Look, we can all complain about the price of goods and services, but the fact of the matter is the cost of government is very real and starts with corporate taxes.
And as we stated, by the way, it's either passed on to the consumer or you have to make cuts with inside your company, which can go to your workforce. It's one or the other or likely both.
Right.
Yeah, and you've got, and right, and in the competition model, it comes down to let's just stick with me here. I know where you guys are talking about because there are so many different variables when it comes to economy, when it comes to economics. But if we talk about it in a closed loop idea of somebody, either the corporations pay too much in tax or they don't pay anything. When it comes down to it, if everything were to be equal, which it's not obviously because different products have different prices, et cetera, but it still comes down to competition. The company that could be the most efficient in their production, whether it's by automation or by making or being more efficient with their labor, et cetera, that's where the competition comes in and gives you a price variable. But also, when you talk about tariffs and stuff, you're right. Foreign competition used to be regulated by the idea that we wouldn't let them come in here and cut our throats. And we'd adjust the price of their products by using tariffs.
Again, you're doing the tunnel vision on economics. You're looking at only the one side of it and forgetting about the cost of a good or service. Also, is one of the major drivers
in an economy. What you're stating is the government, through tariffs, if they raise the cost, will make an economy better. It is impossible to make an economy better by raising the cost artificially of goods and services by the economy, by the government. If you, for example, if you spend more money as a company because of product, you increase productivity, that's another thing.
Right.
But you're forgetting, you're looking at an economy from only one side of it.
Right.
You've got to look at the economy based on the cost of the product and the market. If the price goes up across the board, it hurts the entire economy and hurts the purchasing of the particular widget or service that you're selling.
And you keep in mind that the last caller,
you seem to be ignoring that. Or when we bring it up, you say, okay. And then your next statement is to completely ignore that side of it. And you can't do that.
Well, you can't, because you have to complete the entire circle here. You may not like the idea of a global economy, but let's talk about the benefits of the global economy to domestic producers. We'll go back to the auto markets. Okay. So the domestic automakers, if it weren't for the global economy, the majors would have been gone long before we bailed them out. We shouldn't have bailed them out, but we did, and they would have been gone because they were bleeding cash here domestically, but they were profitable in their foreign arms. So it gets back to, again, you can talk about the idea of a new country back in the day, a brand new country. And what we could produce and have enough for our producers in terms of the work, that 330 million people is just a fraction of what they could serve if they can sell in other places in the world. That's what it comes down to. We can export. When we export things, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing, because we're great. We're the best at producing things. And still, we have the most efficient workforce. It may be more expensive, but it is more efficient. So what are the things in that equation that the caller was leaving out? And what corporations can't control, and that is the cost of government. You point out all the things where they can become more efficient, and that's where they become competitive. But where they lose that competitive edge is in the things they can't control. And the biggest of that collectively is all of the costs of government that apply to their goods and services.
And look, it's part of the frustration. And to our last caller, thanks so much for calling. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And call us again. We'll have
more of an
economic discussion. We're just limited on time, as always. And we've got a 5-hour show. I will tell you, personally, it's frustrating when people believe that if they're sold the right rhetoric, that somehow government increasing the cost of doing business will help an economy.
Right.
And look, the president has promoted that with the tariffs at times, to the point of being ridiculous, because the tariffs are great because we're getting all this money in, and it's a great option. It's wonderful. And then a couple days later, he drops it because everybody knows it's not true.
It goes back to what you were saying about socialism. You can't change the nature of how people act.
Right.
Because when it comes to tariffs, you can say we need to do this and we need to do that, but there is a negative reaction, and there are retaliatory tariffs, and it all has an effect, and you can't change the way people react to things.
Let me put it this way, we're the most patriotic people you could possibly find.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Economics doesn't care about your patriotism.
Nope.
To an economy.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't care.
No.
Because people are going to respond whether you like. We hear it all the time. Well, people should.
Yeah.
Economies don't run by you thinking that people should.
We need to, and
they, right,
it
people,
doesn't work that
people
way.
People should buy American all the time and no place else. They have that option to buy most products online that may be more expensive, and they choose not to do so. You can find the website. You can go. Buy American is all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But when it comes down to it, as we have said, there isn't really a Buy American. There really isn't a Buy a Chinese. Mm-hmm. And I think when this is during the campaign, when the president was, remember the candidate, Trump, was talking about the iPhone. It should be made here in the United States. And they broke it down and they said, well, wait a minute. It's only assembled in China.
Mm-hmm.
And they went through the whole thing about Apple and what how much of a profit that they make. I think it was how far we go back. The iPhone 7 is what it was.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And so what they said was, well, what there? It's not that China makes it, because that's the people think China's making it and they're selling it here. Well, no, China was assembling it.
Mm-hmm.
There were 423 manufacturers of different products worldwide from 28 countries that produced parts for the iPhone. 28 countries. 68 of those companies were within the United States. The supply chain is an octopus all over the world. Well, it's globalization and it's bad. Well, you can't stop it.
Right.
You may wish to stop it. You can't stop it, because people by the hundreds of millions and billions are voluntarily cooperating with each other to produce the best supply chain, which brings the best product at the cheapest cost. That is just the reality of it. And nobody, the president has even learned, tariffs are great. He knows they're not great.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says that one day and then he drops them the next.
Right.
Remember, the steel and aluminum tariffs were the best thing ever. This is wonderful. We're going to keep them on. This is really... And he dropped it 10 days later. After his last... Because you cannot... Economics doesn't care about your patriotism. It doesn't care about my patriotism. Economics is how people respond to incentive. And they're always, for the most part... They always respond to higher costs by attempting to avoid them.
Yes. Absolutely. And this is what the governments can't change.
No, they can't change that. It can't, doesn't matter how you try to sell it. Whether you try to sell it that it's great economically, whether you try to sell it in patriotism, but we should.
Nope.
Economies don't work that way, by what you should do.
Right.
It's what people actually do.
Yes. And there's no way to change that. The largest nations on the planet cannot change that dynamic of how people react. They can't.
Nobody in the history of the... Now, you can have an oppressive government control your economy. You see the result of it. Mm-hmm. Capital flees.
Yes.
There's a reason why Venezuela is in the situation that they're in. There's a reason why the former Soviet Union collapsed upon itself. Because the central government thought that we can do a better job running an economy.
Mm-hmm.
They can't.
Nope.
But they were all doing it. You look at the former Soviet Union, what was that done on? Patriotism. Mm-hmm. Control of everything because of Mother Russia.
For the worker.
Did that work?
Nope.
No. That was for Mother Russia, and that was for the worker. Did it work?
Nope.
What works is capitalism and people involved in business, in industry, and making contracts with other people and looking after their own self-interest, and in doing so, cooperate with people all over the world to produce the best products at the cheapest cost possible. Everything runs that way, and everything runs on those companies making a profit.
Yep.
Because nothing exists. Charities don't exist. Funding for government doesn't exist. Obama was wrong when he said, you didn't build that. Yeah, you did.
Yeah, you did. And you,
private industry has built everything in this country.
It funds everything.
It funds everything. Government funds nothing. They simply transfer the money.
Can't be funded without the expansion of wealth, and that comes purely from the private sector.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Front Eye Radio, he is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So for me, that's always been part of the frustration, is that people, you know, believe. I mean, the socialists believe that they can sell to the American public that the government can run an economy better.
Right.
It's proven that they can't, and they keep talking about the fact. You know, most socialists talk about the fact that that as you know, Bernie Sanders does, for example. We talked about it, that all we have to do is tax the rich. All we have to do is tax the corporations. It's not true. You've got to tax. You have to tax the middle class if you want to have the social welfare state that they want. You have to tax them big time, and still you're not going to pay for it. Still, look how much money we borrow right now. We can't even take care of Medicare for all. But on the other thing about the guy talking about corporate taxers, there's also this belief, and it's being, and it's sold all the time, that we can increase costs and make an economy better.
Right.
That the government can tax more and economy will do better because of it. Completely false.
Yep.
No, there's no evidence in the history of the world that it works that way, and yet it is still sold in the modern United States today. That's just amazing.
Right.
Amazing.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. In the news today, this overnight, Saudi Arabia is set to push OPEC to cut oil output for the second half of the year. According to officials in the group, as signs of a slowing global demand for crude, this from the Wall Street Journal, outweighs threats of war and worries about supply disruptions in the Middle East. So if they're seeing that there's a slowdown worldwide, we already see what's happening with oil here in the United States. There's a glut. We see it moving down. We're seeing something sort of unprecedented where oil prices are going down during the summer driving season.
Right.
And, you know, some are, you have the oil industry worried that prices may crash in many parts of the country to lower than $2 a barrel around.
A gallon.
Mm-hmm. What did I say? $2 a barrel. $2. Thank you so much.
If I can get gasoline at $2 a barrel, man, I'm in.
$2 a gallon by Independence Day.
Right, yeah.
And so that on one hand, you know, that Saudi Arabia is talking about a cut in oil production. And when I saw that story, I said, okay, what are we doing here when it comes to production here in the United States? What's the outlook look like? Because we haven't looked at it in a while. U.S. oil output. This just updated yesterday. U.S. oil output from the seven major shale formations is expected to rise by about 70,000 barrels per day in July to a record 8.52 million barrels per day. The U.S. Energy Information Administration said in its monthly drilling productivity report just yesterday. The largest change is forecast in the Permian Basin in Texas and New Mexico, where the output is expected to climb by 55,000 barrels per day to a fresh peak of 4.23 million barrels per day in July. That means that in its monthly report that output will rise by 1.36 million barrels per day to 12.32 million barrels per day in 2019 that will top the current all-time high of 10.96 million barrels per day set in 2018. And so, again, you're talking about 1.36 million barrels per day increase over a year period just in the United States alone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, that's you think about that. That's mind-boggling. The United States now is the biggest crude oil producer in the world ahead of Saudi Arabia and Russia.
Right.
So we see what's happening where they're not going to stop because they can still make money. They can still make money. What, at $50 a barrel? They can still make money
sure.
at $40 a
sure.
barrel.
Sure. One of the things that has happened, of course, with the increase in domestic production,
And we talked about this dynamic years ago, but it's actually happening now. And we have the, first of all, benefit of being able to export raw crude from the U.S. and now LNG, liquefied natural gas, and that's a big deal. The glut on the global market is also obviously a huge dynamic in driving those prices down. One of the things that has been disingenuous, not accurate, I don't know how to describe it, but certainly the positioning by the OPEC member nations, in this case Saudi Arabia, looking to slow the decline in the prices and citing fundamental reasons that there's going to be a glut, that or there is a glut and there is a lower demand. What they risk in that is what they have been risking for a long time, and especially these days as we increase that domestic production here in the U.S., and that is that market share. Now that we can export, we have the ability to export that raw crude and LNG, the impact of OPEC making a decision to cut production is not as great. I'm not saying it doesn't have an impact. It certainly does. They're still a major player. But if we look at what we have domestically, it is tempered by the fact that our domestic production is increasing all the time because of technology, innovation, and the hard work of people in that industry. We'll see where, again, all of that goes when you look at, because there are a number of things there, too. It's also about, you know, any kind of slowdown in the global economy, and people are looking at the U.S. Will there be a slowdown in the U.S. over the next 18 to 24 months? You have analysts across the globe saying that that is a certain and possibility. There is a certain or at least a definite possibility of that happening. And then the action by the feds or the wavering by the feds and looking at cuts instead of increases on rates, and everything points to a slowdown in the economy. Whether we actually get to that point or not, we don't make predictions here, but that's what spooks the market. And if you have the decrease in spending by the consumer, especially in oil products, then it is going to obviously affect the market. That's where you get that glut. That's where you get that lower demand. But the great news, or I guess bright side of it, of that, is that our domestic production still remains healthy, and we are gaining market share. And we are one of the major producers. We don't have to, the world doesn't have to completely rely on those OPEC member nations. And frankly, they've said a number of things over the years in terms of cutting production, increasing production, making this promise or that. When you're a region that has one product, one thing that you sell to the world, it's hard to cut production. It really is.
We've talked about the worldwide market that the United States is now joining, where we're actually we're still importing, but we're also exporting
raw crude.
And when you look at natural gas production too, the United States every year is going up roughly 12%. We asked a question last week. We were looking. Somebody had brought it up, and we said we'll look it up for you. But the United States is the world's leading producer of natural gas also. And we're increasing 12% a year.
Right.
I mean, we're doing the same thing, whether it's, you know, you see oil, and oil is roughly up. You know, we went from 10.9, roughly 10.9 billion barrels a day to now it's going to be 12.3. So you're talking about a huge increase.
Yes.
You know, you're talking about 15% there, 12% or higher on natural gas. Now we are shipping, you know, LNG, you know, worldwide. And if the danger if you're an OPEC, if you cut, that means you're servicing less customers. Well, who's waiting to fill that role?
That's us. And that was my point, doesn't have the impact when OPEC makes such promises or threats, however you want to look at it. They often can't follow through with that. They may eventually slow production because they don't really have a choice. If we get to a point where there is a global slowdown in the economy and much lower demand. However, there's always going to be, relatively speaking, healthy demand for it. and domestically our producers based on the innovations that have come about in the last decade plus are able to fulfill that role. And that's the benefit of having such a robust domestic production in the oil industry. And frankly, with Iran, going back to, I don't know how far you would have to go back, but if you were to go back, let's say, maybe 20 years, right? Without the innovation that has come about during that time here at home, what has happened in that region with Iran attacking those tankers would have had a much greater impact on the markets and prices. And that's one of the other many benefits of increased domestic production, and we'll see where the market goes. We'll see what the economy does. That is a very real thing, and if we're looking at in terms of a slowdown, that of course is going to impact the economy across the board, and energy is no exception. There is no exemption there. While we still consume it, we consume a lot less of it. You add to it the technology that's come about and from the OEMs and the auto industry and everything else, cars becoming more efficient. And who knows, ride share and everything else, all of that, it becomes something, you know, different in terms of domestic demand. But we have a great, I think, a great position in the market as an industry, the oil industry does.
The president last night tweeting where he said that the United States next week will begin to start deporting the start of millions mm-hmm. of illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. We don't know the specifics on it. The president wasn't specific. I know looking at different analysis on it, the president, they were talking about, you know, bringing in the Insurrection Act mm-hmm. to have the National Guard mobilize, mm-hmm. You know, to deport illegal immigrants. But as they said, a court ruling would hit that immediately and stall that from happening at that point. So what the president is talking about, nobody really sure here at this moment.
Right.
We'll probably have more on that on tonight's show. In other news, the Supreme Court on Monday, this from Fox, threw out the ruling against two Oregon bakers who refused to bake a wedding cake for a lesbian couple. The couple, Melissa and Aaron Klein, cited religious beliefs as a reason for not providing service for a gay wedding. This touched off the latest in a series of such cases making headlines in recent years. During the court's last term, the justices ruled in favor of a Colorado baker in a similar situation, stating that a state body demonstrated improper hostility towards the baker's religion in finding that he violated a state anti-discrimination law. On Monday, the Supreme Court sent the Klein case back down to the lower court, quote, for further consideration in light of their Colorado decision. The central disputes in the case, which pits LGBT rights against religious freedom considerations, have yet to be addressed by the Supreme Court. So there's still a question to be asked. Well, what are you saying to the court? Are you saying that in the case of Oregon, that the state agencies are so biased against religion that you're not even getting to the point of making the decision on it, that you're saying that the court system and the state of Oregon has such hostility to religious views that in itself is what you have to address in the state of Oregon? I'm assuming that's what they mean, because that's what they meant by in the Colorado case. And if they're using that to send it back to a lower court, they're saying you need to look at the hostility of the state government towards religion. That's the problem.
Right. Yep. And it will be interesting to see what they do in Oregon on that, but the message is clear. And I, because it makes you wonder again where the mentality is at the highest court of approaching certain things. They were clear in the Colorado case, though. Look, there was an agenda at work at the state level in Colorado. Right. There was a clear agenda. And you were ignoring the rights of these individuals You were ignoring, you know, in some cases, the process for these individuals, and it just became like you were essentially overbearing as a government.
Well, it seems that they're making the same case in Oregon. And
yes.
Remember, they had to pay a judgment to the couple of $135,000.
Right.
Does the state have to, is the state court going to say that that payment in itself is wrong and they have to be reimbursed for that? Because that's what you're getting down to. Remember, they've been punished for this.
Yeah.
They closed down their bakery.
Yep.
If the state is found in violation of the Klein's rights, how do the Klein's get reimbursement?
Yeah.
Can they sue the state? Can the state be so hostile to religious liberty that after they punish you, destroy your business, fine you and punish you and destroy your life? Will there be a time when the state of Oregon has to pay restitution back to the clients? That seems to me to be the only fair way. If the Supreme Court is stating that you are so hostile to religious liberty that the lower court needs to review this, well, then where do you go from that point? How do you get restitution for the clients?
You know, there was another one with a florist in Washington state that has been sent down, back down to the state. And the point that I made just a moment ago, it seems that the high court, does not want to deal with the issue at hand here. Now, they were right, I think, in the Colorado case, and I think in the Oregon case, and without knowing all the details, likely they were right in saying, reconsider your approach here. Because it has to go through the process in order to get through the system, in order to those lower courts. But the process has to be followed without that kind of behavior that in the case of the Colorado situation, they were rebuked for. You've got to respect the process, and then they will be able to decide the cases like this on their merits. But so far, they haven't made decisions on their merits, but they're not going to be able to avoid that forever. At some point, it will likely get to the highest court. It's just not today.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Higher feed costs will likely cause hog producers to trim back a little bit next year on their torrid pace of pork production increases, but USDA Outlook Chairman Seth Meyer says output next year will still top this year.
But trimming that a little bit, thinking maybe because of higher feed prices, your efficiency loss there, and eventually the animal's gain tends to slow, so you pull back a little bit, so maybe a little bit lighter carcass weights.
But still, he's projecting 2020 pork production at 28.2 billion pounds, up nearly a billion pounds, or about 3.5% from this year. But U.S. pork demand continues high. Plus, Meyer is looking at pork exports next year to rise significantly. One reason,
the fact that the Mexicans lifted the tariff on pork when we lifted tariffs on steel and aluminum. So that really boosted our pork export outlook.
And didn't do hog price prospects any harm either. Meyer forecasting
more than a $6.50 increase year over year
to an average $60.25 a hundredweight next year. In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, a couple more things on the Supreme Court decision to send the Bake a Cake case back down to the lower court, and also the U.S. military releasing new images of the Japanese oil tanker attack. Not sure where they're going to go, but you, as I've said, eventually, yeah, Something's going to happen.
Yeah, something has to happen here. And a stronger defensive posturing, certainly, by the U.S. right now with more troops going to that region.
Yes.
Here is your forecast.
The threat for severe weather continues today from the central and southern plains to portions of the Midwest, Ohio Valley, and Mid-Atlantic region. Some of the storms could, again, contain damaging winds, large hail, and a few tornadoes. Heavy rainfall could also lead to some flash flooding in low-lying areas. Flooding still a concern for Missouri, down through the Tennessee Valley, into central Mississippi, and right on into the Gulf. Flash flood watches and warnings have been issued for areas around Houston, Galveston, central Nebraska, central Indiana, and portions of northern Ohio. And you'll likely run into heavy showers today if you're on I-80 in the state of Nebraska, I-55 around Memphis, hop over to I-40 up towards I-65 in Nashville, I-70 from Indianapolis to Columbus, Ohio, western PA, and the Poconos. Again, all areas for heavy rain today. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Old white conservatives. Feel free to heckle them. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, we're talking about the Supreme Court and the ruling with the Bakers. They tossed, or they didn't toss, everybody, both CNN and Fox had tossed the ruling. They didn't really toss the ruling. They moved the ruling back to the lower court and said, look at the Colorado ruling here.
And
you might want to reconsider what you've done here, because what it seems that they're saying is there was so much bias against this religious couple. But I want to go to Jim. Jim's gone. Jim is trying to make the point that you have the right to serve whoever you want. This is not even about that. What you have to understand is what the issue is here is the fact that you have and now Bakers and others are being targeted by gay activists to go in and say, you need to make a cake specifically for us and design a cake for us.
Mm-hmm.
As we see, many of these that have been sued will sell you a cake.
Right.
They won't design the cake for you.
Right.
What they're saying is that design is, we'll sell you the cake. You can, here's the cake. We won't put the design on for you because we don't, to us, our religion, that is participating in your ceremony, which we cannot do. The cake, you can design it on your own.
Right.
We'll sell you the cake. We'll sell you the flowers. We'll do whatever. But we're not going to participate. The one photographer was, well, no, I'm not going to do the photography here because I can't participate in the actual wedding.
You have to be on site, right. Of course.
I have to be on site. I have to be there, and I can't participate in it. If you've seen the especially the Baker situations, how many of the Bakers have referred? In fact, there's been a few of the Bakers that actually had clientele. You know, didn't matter whether they were gay, straight, what religion they were. Anybody could come in, and when they had a gay couple, asked them to design the cake, they said no. But we will find somebody, we'll sell you the cake and we'll find somebody to design it for you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do the work for you. That wasn't good enough. You must be forced to participate. That's the whole point. You must be forced to participate. And one of the issues is artistic, that I have a right to do the art that I wish to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can't form me because you can't force me. I can bake you I'll bake you the actual cake. I won't do the design on it. That is artistic expression is one of the things that's being debated and what's being used. So it's not even about, as we've said, tolerance anymore. It's not even about service. It's gotten to the point where the gay liberal activists wish for you to, not wish, but they wish to force you by the hammer of the government to participate unwillingly in the actual process of their marriage.
Right.
And that's where the freedom of religion case is at, you know, at this point, that no, you don't have to, you don't have to do that. And that's the point. From what I know, all the bakers that have been sued are willing to sell you the cake.
Mm-hmm.
We're not willing to design it for you.
That's our artistic expression when we do design a cake. That's it, and it is protected.
It's our artistic expression, and it's our unwillingness because of our religion to be part of your ceremony by doing this.
Well, because if you look at what art is, what the creation is, it is about expression, and that expression is always tied to your, and it's reasonable that it is tied and protected by religious liberties, your religious rights. You think about, I don't know, any other kind of creation, any other kind of expression. Again, we're not talking about selling cupcakes or cakes or anything else that are just there for anybody else to buy. We're talking about taking something and creating something for a specific purpose.
A specific ceremony,
that goes
yes.
outside of your religious beliefs. And that is protected. And they have the right to say, no, I'm not going to participate. The one baker said, and he pointed to, I don't know, a number of other bakeries, his competitors. There are bakeries in the area that will do it for you, which was proof that this was about the agenda. We will put this person out of business based on their religion.
Yeah, we'll fine you out of business. Well, yeah, as the state of Oregon did.
Mm-hmm. And in the case of the Colorado situation, that baker, again, was looking at other competitors saying, you can go to all these other places and get that done. And he wasn't going to do that. He wasn't going to do that with his art. That is reasonable. And you know what? If you want to promote, whoever you are, on your Facebook page, hey, this baker in this part of the, it was the Denver area in the Colorado case, in the Denver area, is specializes in gay weddings. Great. And if the other baker goes out of business as a result of everybody else going to him, well, that's the free market at work. People made their choice, and he made his choice. But he has the right to stand, in terms of his art and his expression, he has the right to stand based on his religious, deeply held religious beliefs.
So what I wonder in the Klein case, you know, we've talked about the Oberlin College, mm-hmm. You know, lawsuit.
Right.
And that was defamation of character. But
right.
if the Supreme Court, or if, you know, if the lower court finds that the state of Oregon violated these people's religious rights, okay, or were so biased that they couldn't get a fair hearing, or if it eventually gets to the point where the decision is made, you violated their religious rights, how do they get compensation?
Right, because they're out $135,000.
And their business is gone.
Yes. How do you compensate that?
How do you compensate for violating?
How do you make them whole in something that shouldn't have happened in the first place?
Right. That was due because what the Supreme Court is, what they are saying is, because remember, they never made the judgment on the religious constitutional issue. What they did in the state of Colorado is, your bias was so great from the beginning, there was never any attempt of fairness whatsoever. That what came out of in the Colorado case was, there was such hatred of religion that the state could not be, in that case, an arbitrator of fairness. That state agency could not be viewed as legally fair. So where do they go from this point?
Right.
And where do they go then to where does the lower court go? But that's what the Supreme Court said. There was such animus towards religion. that you couldn't even look at this in any type of fair way to begin with.
Right.
Eventually, as you said before, Eric, it's going to have to be judged by the Supreme Court on the religious freedom aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which
right.
then gets to the point that anybody can force you to do what art or design they wish you to do.
Sure. Right. Yeah. They haven't tackled the core issue. They haven't settled the core issue at the highest court. Eventually, I think they will get back to that. One of the other cases is the Virginia gerrymandering case. Basically, the high court saying that the state house there in the state of Virginia did not have standing. It was Republicans, basically, did not have standing in the court. It was based on standing. And I think the idea behind that is, and I haven't read the majority opinion written by Ginsburg, but Gorsuch was on board. Who else was on board? There was other Thomas was also on board with the decision. But it likely came back to the fact of, or the idea that, well, wait a minute, Republicans in the House, you know, you can change the law. You can go back. And if the people will it, that you can be, through the process, duly elected representatives in that state can go back and revisit that.
The redistricting, yes.
Yes. So we'll see where that goes. I mean, but it was the Democrats saw it as a huge victory. I think in terms of gerrymandering, it is not.
No, it wasn't. It's
not one way or the other. The decision was based purely on standing.
You want to fry your mind? Go look at the different court cases on gerrymandering, and you
right.
can't you can't
yeah,
come up
right.
with, because what happens is it's whoever controls the state are the ones that eventually make the decision
right.
of how to
exactly.
redraw the districts.
Exactly.
And what's fair?
There's look, define fair.
And that's why I said if you go now, I'm talking about this would be painful. It's painful research when you actually start doing it and start reading into the court cases and then looking at courts that are completely diametrically opposed to the redistricting ideas of another court.
Right.
And then you realize, okay, it's appointed people in the courts deciding how to redistrict instead of, you know, the elected representatives, which
right.
is the way it's supposed to be.
Right. Right.
And so you're like, well, that's unfair to begin with, too. And it really, when you get into the minutia of the morality or the fairness of gerrymandering, it'll fry your mind.
It will.
When you start
going
through the legal aspects of it.
Affectionately, they call it cracking and packing. So cracking would be dividing a district, you know, splitting up an area
right.
That used to be maybe one district or something. And packing would be expanding a district to include this area over here, which would be beneficial to the party, of course, that is in power at that moment, and would include a demographic in that area that they want to move into, expand that district to include. And it is fascinating all day long, but it is not over, and it likely we're not going to see the end of that process in our lifetime.
Well,
it's just not going to happen.
We are not in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
The gerrymandering lawsuits will go on until the end of the world.
And
it will never be solved.
And one of the reasons is here in the States is you look at like our area, North Texas, huge corporate growth, huge population growth. What does that mean, though? It means that there are people coming here from other states. And so you have a district that in terms of the demographics is changing in every area. But that's always happening because people move. And those demographics change within any given district. So gerrymandering in and of itself isn't going to go away. And I suspect the lawsuits aren't going to go away. By the way, the high court, looking to in conference on Thursday, looking at some things, including some documents related to DACA and other mm-hmm. petitions by the Trump administration. And there are still a number of cases that we expect decisions on before the end of this session.
So. And one final comment. All you people, stop coming to Texas. Oh, wait a minute. I'm a Yankee. Never mind.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
There's a new Shell Rotella engine oil for gas engines. Shell Rotella Gas Truck is available now. Megan Pino, Shell Rotella Global Brand Manager, tells us what was behind the development and more about the product.
Obviously, Shell Rotella's heritage is heavy-duty engine oil, and that will remain our heritage. And we know that our customers work hard, but they also love to play hard. And many of our customers also own a gasoline-powered pickup truck, SUV, and perhaps as a personal vehicle or as part of the business. We also know that truck owners use their trucks for different purposes than a car, to be able to tow something, whether that's an RV or a boat for fun on the weekend, for, you know, your business, for hauling equipment. So you're doing something different with your truck than you are with a car. And so why use the same motor oil that you would in your car as your truck? There are three viscosity grades, 0W20, 5W20, and 5W30, which covers any gasoline-powered pickup truck or SUV in terms of the manufacturer recommendation.
For more, go to Rotella.com. This engine report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. I was thinking about the president's tweet last night about they're going to start the deportation of millions of illegal immigrants. Now, I know the Daily Caller is talking about the fact that inside the White House they're talking about bringing back the Insurrection Act, last used, by the way, during the Los Angeles riots by Bush in, 92? And before that hadn't been used in decades before. That's not going to go anywhere. That'll be challenged immediately in the courts, and therefore, that's it. So what else he has in mind, I have no idea. Unless it's just a tweet, and then it doesn't appear again. I noticed that a lot of media really didn't cover that on the forefront. For example, Fox didn't have it at the forefront of their website. Wall Street Journal didn't. And I wonder if they're thinking, well, does he mean anything by this, or is it just a tweet?
Yeah, I don't know how effective you could be, how much you're going to be able to mobilize, in what period of time. The tweet is, I think, more about symbolism than anything. We'll see what kind of, ICE blitz there might be in the coming days, but I don't suspect it will be too big. We'll see what the president says.
This is Red Eye Radio. On Westwood One.